Midweek Media Watch, what's been happening so far?
Well, I thought I'd like to start just briefly with a bit of a shout out to Anke Richter, freelance journalist based in Christchurch, if she's listening, because she was listening to the two of us 2 weeks ago, last time I was on with you. And I mentioned just really briefly in passing how she'd written a long piece for the Herald about Gloria Vale, about 3,500 words, and was pretty upset to see that within hours it had been boiled down and filleted by the Daily Mail, the Mail Online in Australia, and put up on their site. She said, look, this isn't the first time it had happened to her. And she'd gone on Facebook to say, look, this can't be right. And how do I, you know, get them to own up to this or maybe even give me something for it? And I said on air, look, you know, it'd be a struggle for her because this is what that Mail Online does. It takes people's stuff and just, you know, plows through it, put it on their own site for the clicks and put the clickbaity headlines on it. But she was listening and she got in touch later on to say that actually she had confronted them about it and had a small measure of justice. So I had a chat to her on Media Watch on Sunday. You can hear an interview with Anke all about that and all about being a freelance correspondent for the market in Germany, because she's originally German, out of Christchurch. So, it was interesting stuff.
Does a small measure of justice include money?
It does, it does. But the details of how she went about it are quite interesting. So I won't go into all that here for fear of spoiling it for our Media Watch Sunday audience. But no, it's great. It was great fun talking to her. And there are so many journalists in this position that she's been in, with the Mail Online, with this sort of industrial copying that they have, scouring the net, scraping up other outlets' work and putting it on their own site and harvesting the lucrative online traffic. It's really bad. So it's good that she stood up for it.
How do they get away with that, Colin, with copyright?
Well, this is the thing. They always provide a link back to the original story. So yes, there was a link to the Herald's piece on Gloria Vale, but that took you to the Herald, of course, behind a paywall now. And this is exactly what the paywall is for, to provide income for the Herald to pay proper journalists like Anke doing really thorough work. So for the Mail Online to take it, put it online. I mean, they say that as long as there is that link back, it's a form of attribution. And basically, when you talk to lawyers, copyright lawyers in Australia, and the rules aren't too different here, they'll say, well, you have to litigate, you have to go to court over every single piece. And lawyers advise you basically don't do it because it ends up being not worth it. But as Anke found out, when you confront them and you ask about it, you might just get something.
Very interesting and good to know for all those people out there who have written stuff and it's just getting ripped off, basically.
Yep. And there are heaps of them, and it's happened to her in the past as well. So this time she didn't take it lying down, and good on her.
And Oranga Tamariki, this has got to be a big story that you'll be covering, or have been covering anyway, haven't you?
Yeah, I mean, it's a big, big thing. And now we're going to have, three inquiries about it. The last one announced today, the Chief Ombudsman's going to take a look at it. So, I mean, I did this in the program last week and... last weekend. And, you know, we were left with that difficult situation where... It's a story where we saw the Melanie Reid newsroom video, which I guess a lot of people have seen, if not the original, then extracts in the news. And that's at a point where it hits the crisis of the baby being uplifted and that 36 hours of uncertainty. And it's pretty harrowing stuff. There was also the First Up program and Dearest Stewart, the other story that's put Oranga Tamariki in the gun, which was the Samoan family that had a child that they wanted to keep caring for. But Oranga Tamariki, with not much notice, according to Indira Stewart's report, removing the child. So, you know, we're left in that position of not knowing, when we get to, you know, the crisis point of both these situations. Well, what is the real situation with Oranga Tamariki? How many times is this happening, and how typical is that of the social workers and the practice that we see? So now there are three inquiries. Hopefully there will be enough of those that will become public, and we'll find out a lot more about what's really going on. Because when it was set up, Oranga Tamariki was a five-year project, and we're only about 2 years into that. And when Stuff looked at this, did a big series that didn't make quite the same sort of impact, but last December they did a big series about all of this, and that had the same stats in it about young Māori whānau having their babies taken away at this increasing rate. And at that time, Andrew Beecroft, who's going to be leading one of these inquiries, he's the Children's Commissioner, he said, look, we're 18 months at that point into this five-year plan. Oranga Tamariki is doing some of the right things. Let's see where this takes us. So now that he's inquiring into it, perhaps we'll find out in greater depth what the reality is.
Yes, and with Melanie Reed's piece, it was powerful not only because of the content, but because of how it was shot too, I felt, because of the just on cell phones. I mean, they had a cameraman there, but what he was shooting on or she was shooting on, I don't know. But it was such a fly-on-the-wall piece, wasn't it?
Oh, it really was. I mean, and that's what gives it its impact. As I said, you know, the stats, the situation. And in fact, Jean Tahuia, who you spoke to on your program last week, didn't you? She's been saying these things, drawing attention to this. So it's almost like people have to see it to really believe it and respond. So, I mean, that's the power of journalism and the power of pictures, obviously. But it's interesting that a lot of journalists and commentators commenting on this have been saying, well, you know, this is appalling, this should stop, and the ministry shouldn't be doing this anymore, and its social workers shouldn't be doing this, let's call a halt. Politicians, much more reluctant to say that. You know, they want to have an inquiry, they want to look at it, but they're of course aware of the fact that it's not for nothing, that a court orders such a removal of a child in that vulnerable position. So, yeah, like I say, the inquiries are a good thing, marrying up with the journalism. But, you know, it's a puzzle to me that, you know, we've had, it wasn't a secret, the statistics. The chief executive of the Oranga Tamariki had fronted up in select committees and talked about it. So, yeah, the power of those images prompting that response and the politicians and authorities responding in that way. And let's see what comes out of the inquiries.
And political commentator Chris Trotter's post on Twitter.
Yeah, that surprised me a little bit. What he said was, in a piece that was pretty strong, saying that this was unacceptable. He was one of those urging Jacinda Ardern personally, calling her out, saying, Jacinda, this is what poverty looks like. This is what it does. Urgent action required here. But on Twitter, he said, of the social workers who took the child, in Melanie Reed's video, the defence of just following orders was denied at Nuremberg. It's not available to Oranga Tamariki or DHBs or the police, not even when their orders come from the family court. Now, that's pretty strong because, you know, Nuremberg, of course, being the war crimes trials after World War II. And, you know, the just following orders thing, I mean, that gets a little bit uncomfortably close to, you know, playing the old Nazi card, which is a real overreaction. And that's one worry that has come out of all this is social workers being exposed. You know, we heard the chief of the social workers union saying, on RNZ, that some social workers have cancelled their Facebook pages because they were filling up with abuse and hostile comments. You know, so I think as a result of this, it might be really hard to recruit, particularly Māori social workers, in the areas they're needed to address the pressing problems. So, yeah, it's a difficult one. And I don't think comments like that from Chris Trotter, that level of emotion around it, really help anyone in the end.
And talking about getting in behind closed doors, a story on property investors at a conference.
Yeah, this was great. This was Kirsty Johnston, one of the Herald's leading investigative reporters, and exactly the sort of stuff they like to put behind the paywall for the Herald, because this is one that really shows what's worth paying for, I think. She attended a property investors conference, and the Weekend Herald was full of what she found out. And it's the sort of things where people pay, I think this is $55 for a ticket, a lunch, and the chance of winning a trip to Fiji, and people that want to make their money from property. The big goal was, you know, to get to a passive income. That's what these people are being told. And it's so bombastic. And these are the things you never see unless a journalist goes there and exposes it. For example, she writes about the first slide goes up in the presentation, celebrating the death of the proposed capital gains tax. You know, phew, says the slide, we defeated it. It's been defeated. The host pauses for dramatic effect and looks up. And I did have to cancel a new Porsche. And, you know, the laughter ripples throughout the crowd, but they're setting a scene there. And even KiwiBank's chief economist, was in Kirsty's story. He was introduced as the second speaker, saying, look, he tells the audience of would-be property investors, interest rates will remain low for a very long time. Migration is good. He talked about lack of supply and people having to live in higher density arrangements. And here's the quote, think of battery hens rather than free-range hens. And behind him, a slide goes up for the audience saying, we are short of 100,000 homes! You know, the property market will always hold up over time with these shortages. And And Kirsty says, the day goes on and on like this, presenter after presenter saying, don't worry, there is money to be made. So don't worry about the market downturn. So, yeah, it's pretty sobering stuff to think of a hall full of people all wanting to cash in and being, the word is mentored, but basically given this advice that, you know, the market goes up and down, but you will always make money. It's risky stuff.
And no idea that a Herald journalist was there.
No, and that's the thing. I think people would have absolutely no idea that what they were saying was going to be reported in the paper. Pretty funny as well that the economist Shamibeel Yacoob was booed and hissed and accused of beating up on investors. They called him Mr. Rental because, of course, he's the guy that says, actually, that's don't right. take the risk. Rent a house, that's what I do. I think he's bought a house now, but for a long time he advised people not to. And so, you know, the calling out and sort of almost demonising of him at this thing to whip up this crowd of would-be investors into a frenzy, you know, with all with that goal of, you know, working the system and getting that passive income that everybody is dreaming of when they pay their $55 to turn up for the advice.
And just as a matter of interest, I talked to Jeremy last week about the 10,000 subscribers to that Herald paywall. Has that increased in the last week? And is that sustainable?
I don't know. I mean, there's two problems there. I guess it would have been inching up week upon week. But their real goal is to get 4 to 6% of their online audience, which is pretty massive, that's the basically the free most of the free audience today, to convert 4 to 6% of them to paying subscribers within 3 years of launching that paywall. They said that 10,000 was the target they had for a year of operation and that they've met that within 6 weeks, so they're very pleased. Didn't shift the share price of NZME much, which is hovering around about sort of 50 cents a share, which is pretty low. And the announcement was made at the annual general meeting where some grumpy investors who hadn't had dividends were saying, you know, not much about the paywall. It didn't seem to be much of a consolation to them. But the problem is also retaining them, because once you've got them, you really want to retain them. So that's why the Herald discounted it at basically half price, $2.50 for a week for the initial period if people signed up for a longer period. But the thing is, other offers will come on. There are other subscription services out there. And the difficulty is, they're worried about the churn, as they call it in the business, that people then fall off the map. Not only do you have to get them used to the idea of paying, you have to hold them and keep them there. And if they struggle, you might see them being offered better and better deals, you know, reducing the price of that subscription. So that's the thing to look out for. If they keep offering lower and lower increments on the and at longer terms for the paid subscriptions, that will probably show that they're not confident that they can keep it up.
Mm. And on the subject of the churn, David Seymour and ACT.
Yeah, that's funny, isn't it? They seem to have absolutely no trouble when other parties have their party conferences. It's annoying to me sometimes that they don't talk about the party policy or what the members are discussing. It's often about the leaders, Jacinda Ardern or Simon Bridges, and what they're involved in at the time. But when ACT pop up, even with their relatively, well, pretty tiny support, 13,000 votes at the last election, and having trouble cracking 1% in the polls currently. But, you know, as we've seen in the last few days, their free speech policy really grabbed the media's attention. But otherwise, you know, this party conference they had, pretty well covered, was billed as a relaunch. And I'll look at that a bit in Media Watch in the weekend as well. But there weren't very many new policies. And I thought this was quite amusing. On News Talk ZB, David Seymour was interviewed by Tim Wilson on their weekend collective show, and Tim Wilson obviously disappointed that he thought this relaunch had been oversold and there weren't too many new policies, and he challenged David Seymour like this.
Kia ora, David. Hey, look, here's my take on ACT. It's a bit of a relic from the 90s. Sort of Kurt Cobain-y, grunge, plaid shirts, long hair. You promised this big relaunch and you come up with flat tax, which is an old ACT idea. It's nothing new here. What's going on?
Well, I think you're being a bit overly simplistic, and I suspect the reason that you said that is that you yourself are a relic of the 90s who loves Kurt Cobain and plaid shirts and would grow your hair quite a lot longer if only nature would let you.
Actually, David, David, actually, can I just jump in here? I don't want to fight it out over style. In the 80s...
Hang on,
David. Let's just back the truck up. I am a child who flourished in the 80s. My hair was longer than you were tall. And I'll tell you what, I dislike Kurt Cobain. I thought all that stuff was terrible. Very anti-grunge. Let's keep moving.
Well, anyway, I don't think anyone's that interested in your upbringing.
dismissed by Tim Wilson.
Yeah, I thought that was not a conventional interview with a political party leader. I quite like that. They're getting all spiky about their 90s cred. But in another interview, David Seymour...
Not sure why Kurt Cobain got dragged into either of it.
No, I know. I mean, well, particularly as Tim Wilson was saying he wasn't a fan, and David Seymour didn't seem to be responding to that either. Funny that he would have a crack about him trying to grow his long hair, so as if to insinuate he was too old to grow long hair or would struggle to do it. So interesting attempt to bite back. But, you know, there's no reason that political party leaders shouldn't have a crack back when someone's teasing them about their party being too old-fashioned.
Especially not on Talkback.
No. But David Seymour was doing a lot of interviews about this. He did one the day before this relaunch of the party, so-called. And it was interested, as we heard, you know, he wants to change the law to bolster freedom of speech, or a couple of laws, including the Crimes Act. But one thing that stood out for me on the Saturday, he went on the News Hub Nation show and said that one of the laws he wants to change is the Harmful Digital Communications Act, because he says this protects people from online bullying. This is the so-called cyberbullying law. So people who have been abused online in a really egregious way can apply to have posts taken down and action taken against people that post really nasty stuff. And Act says it should only now apply to under 18s, because adults shouldn't be protected from offensive or upsetting opinions. They should be able to fight it out. And when David Seymour was asked why you want to change this Act, this is one reason he brought up.
You know, what the Harmful Digital Communication Act says, you're not allowed to say things that are offensive. If you think someone said something offensive, then you can actually go and have that litigated through the courts. Now, just remember, Newsroom, a very important establishment in New Zealand journalism, has already had to face off a threat under the Harmful Digital Communication Act. I don't think that adults should be able to use it to litigate disputes with other adults.
What's he referring to there?
Well, that's quite interesting. It was a case where he said Newsroom. This was all about Sir Ray Avery. Do you remember with his Million Babies concert and his Life Pods and his fundraising?
Oh, yes.
He was going to get, I think it was Phil Collins, although he was trying to keep the name of the celebrity a secret, and said, we're going to have this huge concert. Helen Clark got involved because she didn't want the concert to go ahead, and he ended up, you know, really in the media spotlight. But this drew attention to the fact that some people who had invested in his projects and funded them, like Sam Morgan, for example, had pulled out or wanted their money back, and all of a sudden there was a lot of scrutiny. And Newsroom, the online outlet, did several stories looking at his business operations and his promises and some of his marketing. And this led to a challenge by Sir Ray Avery. He said, I find these articles harmful and I want them taken down. Now, this was held up by David Seymour as a way in which this law could be used to, you know, muzzle the media. And this is why this law must go, and he wants it changed. But that case never got anywhere near a court. He complained to NetSafe, Sir Ray Avery. NetSafe said, we're not at all sure this law can apply to the media at all, and advised him, if you want to do something about it, go to the district court, try your luck there. They told Newsroom, no need to do anything, don't need to take your stories down. So I don't think David Seymour has firm grounds for citing that as a reason that the Harmful Digital Communications Act needs to be amended. And since it was passed in 2015, no one else, to my knowledge, has used it to try and muzzle the media in any way.
And finally, Colin, you've got an entertaining obit.
Yeah, this was in Stuff's papers last Friday, a full-page obituary for the long-serving editor of the local paper in St Arno. And I thought this must be, you know, the town in the Nelson Lakes, you know, tourist little village there, but it wasn't. It was St Arno in Australia. And I thought, well, why are they running an obit for a local paper editor in Australia all throughout the New Zealand Stuff papers? But it was actually a pretty good choice. It was Ella Ebery, who had died aged 103, and she had edited the North Central News in St Arno in Wimmera in Victoria from the age of 63, and she was still editing it at the age of 97 when she was
Ella.
Made redundant. Yeah, she said she was outraged at being made redundant at that age, and she still felt she had years left to give. In fact, there's a great video the ABC made with her a couple of years back, and here she is talking about doing the job.
I married a poor guy who should have married a lady who played bowls and cooked his dinner and looked after him and drove him round. He was always very proud of me, but he could never follow, he could never catch up with me, so to speak. He accepted the fact that I was different. I didn't set out to be a career woman, and I didn't set out to become a journalist at 60. That was the first time I got the opportunity to be a journalist.
Oh, well deserved.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? And that she was talking about her husband, first off, who is a shearer, who she married and travelled around with him, you know, producing wool and so on. And she's written a whole bunch of stuff, apart from the stuff she wrote for the paper, about rural life. And, you know, so it's an incredible chronicle. Someone will probably publish it now as well. They should. And, yeah, she died aged 103. And apparently there's a morning tea for her in St Arno Town Hall at 2 p.m. tomorrow.
Oh,
if anyone's
great.
Listening in Wimmera in Victoria.
That's fantastic. Well, Colin, thank you very much. That's very interesting. And we will have your, it's all posted on your Media Watch page, all
absolutely,
the links.
Media Watch page of the RNZ website, links to all of the stories we talked about there, including that video of Ella Ebury, who just died last week.
We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Sure thing. I'll be back.